Looking for a quality car wash without breaking the bank? Mr. Magic Car Wash offers daily discounts and will have your car clean, shiny, and dry in just minutes. Visit MrMagicCarWash.com today for more information about our services and to find a location near you.
Our Bridgeville location has now reopened with new equipment and an improved automatic process. Check out Mr. Magic Car Wash at any of these five great locations: Brentwood, Castle Shannon, Banksville Road, Upper St. Clair, and the newly reopened Bridgeville. Mr. Reuter Plumbing with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge. Why call Mr. Reuter first? Free estimates. You know the price before we start. Fixed right the first time. Clean, professional technicians, and all work guaranteed. Residential services include complete plumbing, repairs, clogged drains and sewer cleaning, faucets and disposals, toilets and water heaters. Drain cleaning services include trench, sewer and water line replacement, pipelining and video inspection. Mr. Reuter Plumbing, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Service when you want it. Red carpet treatment, make the call, 724-553-3355 or 412-567-1222. Online at Reuter2.com. That's Reuter, the number 2.com.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Ken Laird and Stoners, 365. We talk Steelers and more Steelers 365 days a year.
Style points don't matter. We win the game. This is a legendary defense.
On Trib Live Radio.
It's Steelers 365 on Trib Live Radio. We're brought to you by Mr. Reuter Plumbing with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge. Online at Reuter2.com. Reuter, the number 2.com. Mr. Magic Car Wash with five terrific locations to serve you. Brentwood, Castle Shannon, Banksville Road, Upper St. Clair, and Bridgeville at MrMagicCarWash.com. And by Garland Insurance and Nationwide products and solutions to help you and your family build for the future. Contact Nationwide's Rich Garland today, 412-678-8868. Find out if your money could be working harder for you. It is Steelers-Browns week. At Heinz Field, the Steelers have not lost to Cleveland since 2003. Will this be the year? Landry Jones is starting for Pittsburgh, we believe. We'll hear from Mike Tomlin on that in a moment. We're unsure of who will start for Cleveland. It could be Johnny time if Josh McCown is not healthy enough to come back to practice. But Johnny Manziel didn't exactly get the baton passed to him either by Mike Pettine on Tuesday, who the Cleveland coach said at his press conference, quote, "We've said all along Josh McCown started the season as our number one quarterback. He's been out due to injury and potentially coming back. I get the call for a why not on Manziel, but we're asked as coaches to put the roster out there that's going to give us the best opportunity to win," end quote. That being said, McCown didn't practice. I watched the Thursday night game, as I'm sure many of you did, Bengals and Browns last week. And Johnny did the team on a 92-yard drive at the end of the first half and looked good. But really hit three big passes on the run where he was on the move and out of the pocket. In the second half, he was flat awful. He was 4 of 15 for 40 yards and took three sacks in the final two quarters. He's not consistent enough to give you a feeling that he can win games against good teams in this league. He'll put a drive or two together, but even with Landry, the Steelers should beat him. McCown has been a little more steady and presents a little more of a problem. So this will be, I think, if McCown does play here, indeed a test. It's a division game. Yes, you're at home, but you got Landry, and you can't expect to be blowing even the Browns out with your backup quarterback. Probably the bigger quarterback news, though, came from the Indianapolis Colts yesterday, and the news that Andrew Luck is out with a pretty serious abdominal laceration injury, and he may be gone for the season. They're saying 2 to 6 weeks. That's pretty vague. I always go for my medical expertise to Dr. Chow now. That's at ProFootballDoc on Twitter, and he says typical number for a kidney laceration is 6 to 8 weeks. The initial Colts estimate of 2 to 6 is optimistic. So if he's out 6 weeks, well, how does that affect the Steelers? Of course, they play the Colts in week 13. That's an 8:30 p.m. start, December the 6th at Heinz Field. You know, Hasselbeck is their backup quarterback. He's pretty good. He's won a few games. As far as backup goes, he may be the best one out there. He's probably as good as Josh McCown, but the point is, your next two home games in Heinz Field, you got to win these games. Josh McCown or Johnny Manziel, and now Matt Hasselbeck. So right there, you are putting yourself at 7 wins, and you've got the Ravens and Browns still to play at the end of the season. That looks like 9. And even further big news, maybe the Colts will not win the division if he's out the rest of the year. And if you get the 5 seed, there's a chance you could go to division-winning AFC East team of your choice, spin the roulette wheel, Jacksonville, Houston, who knows? Mike Mularkey's Tennessee Titans, that division stinks. And might be one of those years where everything just kind of spins right for you at the end of the year in a season that's, for the Steelers, not really spun very well for them with all these injuries they've had to deal with. As always here on the Wednesday edition of the show, we go through the highlights or lowlights of the Tomlin press conference from Tuesday, in case you missed it, in some tidy sound bites. Tomlin was upset with the defense in terms of a couple things, and he talks about a few of those items here. Here's how Mike T started the press conference with some of his critiques.
We need to shore up some run gaps. I thought from a coverage standpoint, we dropped a few things, but largely from a positive perspective, I thought we were extremely physical. And physical up front, physical at linebacker, physical in the secondary, and I thought that physicality aided in our efforts. There were a lot of balls on the ground and things of that nature. We were able to get some of them. I thought it created a climate that was, you know, that was conducive to us doing what we wanted to do. From a negative standpoint, I talked about a couple run gaps were dropped and we lost some receivers. I thought we could have done a better job in one-on-one rush opportunities in some instances.
Yeah, and when he's talking about one-on-one rush opportunities, they didn't have a sack of Derek Carr in the game. The guy threw 4 touchdown passes. We know the secondary is not elite. There's not Darrell Revis's back there. I thought they handled themselves okay, all things considered. If this team doesn't get pressure, they're done. They're going nowhere. They are not beating Tom Brady and the Patriots in the playoffs. They're not going to beat the Oakland Raiders in the playoffs if Oakland would somehow get there and they play them again. They need pressure. This is a league of you can't let the quarterback stand back there and have 2 to 5 seconds to throw the football. So that was discouraging. The Steelers coming into the game had 22 sacks. They left with 22 sacks. I think Tomlin is right on the money there. And, of course, he talked about the run defense too, but the more pressing concern is the play of the linebackers, and despite the win, that's what you start to worry about. See what they can do against a Cleveland offensive line that actually is not terrible because they didn't trade Joe Thomas and Alex Mack, their center, who was hurt last year. Also, he was Tomlin asked about the return game. Now, Jacoby Jones was the new addition, but meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Tomlin sort of gave him a pass, it sounded like to me.
I'm excited about having Jacoby with us. Not a lot of work leading up to the game with him. Really, it was kind of ad-lib, if you will. Excited about getting a week's preparation with him in our kick return game to watch the impact that he might have. But he provided great energy. It was good to have him in the fold. Look forward to getting a full week's preparation.
Good energy. I didn't see the good energy, but if Tomlin saw it, okay. Maybe he tried to trip him in the hallway and he got around him. I think there is something to be said for ad-libbing. There was one sequence where Dan Fouts was saying on the telecast, hey, look, this is where the blocking was set up, and Jacoby Jones went the wrong way. He didn't practice at all, so you got to give him more than a week. And our Josh Taylor crunched the numbers yesterday at NFL.com with the stats, and I guess the Steelers somehow are middle of the pack, dead middle, 15th in return yardage and kickoffs. That's hard to believe, but they were no better this week. And anyway, Tomlin defended his boy, who he brought in, Jacoby, off the waiver wire. As far as the quarterbacks go, here was the Pittsburgh view from Mike Tomlin and who he thinks will play this week. Of course, Roethlisberger had said on his radio show he was not ruling himself out. Here's Mike T.
From an injury standpoint, after the game, we're evaluating Ben. He's continuing to be evaluated today. We'll leave the door ajar for him. But it's just slightly ajar. I think it's prudent that we anticipate playing without him and prepare to play with Landry Jones. I know that's what we're thinking right now from a staff standpoint as we prepare. We'll let him go through his processes. We'll continue to communicate with him and our medical staff. But from a planning structure standpoint, much like it was a couple weeks ago, we're preparing to play with Landry, and we're also prepared to get Mike ready, and we'll see where Ben's health is. Like I said, again, the door's ajar, but it's just slightly ajar.
Slightly ajar translates to he ain't playing this week, nor should he really. I mean, there's no sense with a less than 100% Ben putting him out there, even against the Browns. You know, one fat guy on the D-line could fall on him when he can't move out of the pocket. It's just give him his 2 weeks. It's Landry time. Let's hope Ben doesn't go Frankie Liriano style into that slightly ajar door and throw his shoulder out in the process. Mike Tomlin seemed to be ahead of the curve in terms of the Cleveland QBs. He is fully expecting Manziel to be on the bench.
We're anticipating and preparing to defend Josh McDowell, their quarterback. Obviously, Johnny Manziel has played some, but when you look at the tape, it's obvious that Josh is their guy, and his tape, and not only his tape, but his statistics bear that out. He's done a good job for him this year. He's the number one passer in the NFL on third downs. I think he's got a quarterback rating of plus 130 on third downs, so possession downs are going to be big. We didn't do enough in possession downs a week ago. We got to do more in possession downs in this game. Obviously, we got to prepare for the changes that occur if Johnny were to play. They are some subtle changes. We'll prepare accordingly, but the vast majority of our preparation will be geared toward defending and minimizing Josh and what he does at the quarterback position. Both guys are extremely mobile and are capable of creating. I think their play selection reflects that mobility in both guys. They consciously move the pocket with misdirection pass, but both guys are capable of creating and ad-libbing as normal play structure breaks down with their mobility. We've seen Johnny do it. We've seen Josh do it. We got to be prepared to minimize what both guys are capable of creating in those instances. We got to rush hard. We got to rush smart.
So that's a lot of flowery talk about the quarterbacks and their mobility. It is something, I guess, that McCown is leading the league in passer rating on third downs. It's not something I was aware of. So Tomlin did his research there. Josh McCown's been in the league since 2002. And he goes all the way back to Arizona and played with Detroit, with the Raiders, with Carolina, Chicago, Tampa, now Cleveland. He has been around forever. So he's thrown a lot of passes in this league, 2,000 passing attempts, 72 touchdown passes, also 63 picks. This year in his seven games of action, he's had a two-pick game. He's had a couple where he threw one interception, but he's done a pretty good job, actually, of keeping the turnovers down. He's got 11 touchdowns and four interceptions. And the rushing yardage is pretty minimal for Josh McCown. But he's had a game where he threw 51 times this year, 36 of 51 at Baltimore for 457 yards. So you shouldn't just disregard him, I guess. The thing about it is, like Tomlin talks about there later in the presser, he talked about the good receivers that Cleveland has. Like, that is proof positive that Tomlin is just lying out of his butt. I mean, this is the worst receiving core in the league. They have Dwayne Bowe wandering around totally lost. They got Taylor Gabriel in the slot. He dropped like eight passes last Thursday. The tight end is good, but he had a couple drops. Barnage has a lot of catches this year. He looked like a mess. I guess they got Benjamin. He's put up some numbers. But it's just they don't threaten anybody there. Crowell and Johnson, the running backs, maybe not bad. That's Cleveland. It's just Cleveland, you know. And at this point, they're 2-7. They're demoralized. You got to beat this team. Back to the problems with the Steelers. Here's one that he slipped in terms of the running back health. D'Angelo Williams has a foot sprain. So then he was asked about, well, what's up with your backup running backs? Is Jordan Todman ready to go? Is Isaiah Pede ready to go? And here was Tomlin's answer.
Todman is ready. He's been here obviously an extended period of time now. He's had enough time to have the detail necessary to perform above the line. We're still very much in the teaching mode with Pete and obviously how he performs from a detail and assignment standpoint during the course of this week will dictate whether or not he's a part of the equation at the end of the week.
So that's a little frightening. You know, you okay, Todman's ready, but Pede's probably not or might not. Is D'Angelo, so got a Landry Jones, Jordan Todman backfield with Roosevelt Nix, and, you know, Spaeth's out already, so you got Jesse James in there. Yikes, maybe this is a week they could lose to Cleveland. I don't think so, but that's a little troubling. Back to the return game, Tomlin was asked about whether it's his returner's fault or the team's fault, and then Tomlin kind of talked himself in circles and eventually came back to the kick return game is above the line somehow, or the blockers are above the line. Here's the return nonsense.
You know, we're always focused on every element of the equation. Like on offense, when we talk about the protection of the football as an 11-man job, the same can be said for the return game. Production of the return game is an 11-man job. The man that's returning the ball gets a lot of attention, but those that block for him obviously are a critical element of success or lack thereof. So the answer to your question is both. We're excited about having Jacoby and get the type of detail that's going to allow him to be successful. But we're also excited about continuing to grow with the core group of guys that we have that block and open holes for him in the return game.
Has their performance been below the line?
No, has not.
And I guess, technically, they've been at the line, 15th in the league, dead even. But they're not very good. You know, you want it would just be refreshing for Tomlin to come out and say, you know, we stink in the return game. We got to get better. I cut Dre Archer because he stinks, but the returners and the blockers stink too. And we're hoping Jacoby Jones saves our ass. Otherwise, Danny Smith's out of here. You know, once, just once, instead of blowing positivity over everything. Maybe I'm just a negative person. To the Mike Mitchell issue and the Roosevelt Nix issue, because we shouldn't rule him out from this. They had two players who forced fumbles, and before the play was over, were so proud of themselves, patting themselves on the back, in Santonio Holmes fashion, pointing their thumb at their own name on the back of their jersey, that they didn't bother to notice that the football was laying on the ground, which is, you know, it's a pretty important thing. So we'll have votes on this, I'm sure, on Jagoff of the Weekday as we start at 10 a.m. every Wednesday. But again, you know, here's an opportunity for Tomlin to lay into his guys and send a message. This is a coaching issue. This is a discipline, selfishness, team issue. And instead, Tomlin just takes the softball.
I would like them to be aware that the ball's on the ground.
Do you say anything to those guys to make them more aware of it?
Yeah, the ball's on the ground.
That'll teach him, Mike. That'll send a message home. I mean, I got to believe he's more serious about this when the media's not around, because he just hates the media. And, you know, who can blame him, I guess. We're all Jagoffs in our own way, but, I mean... I hope that behind the scenes he is tougher on his guys than that. Hey guys, the ball's on the ground. You might want to take a look at that. Is that a lasting change? You know, think about your teammates who are fighting out there with you. You don't recover those two fumbles. What a difference that game could be, and your record could be 4-5 instead of 5-4. So it's frustrating to fans, and you know, as a fan, I would think you would want your coach to come out a little bit more vociferously against these guys. Yeah, they won. But they gave up 35 points, and they're too busy patting themselves on the back in the middle of a play to not follow the football. The kicker had an error this week. Not only did the Boz miss one, I guess he kicked the game winner, and he kicked two others. It wasn't a horrible game. He kicked one out of bounds on a kickoff, and they passed up a field goal on the first drive of the game. Steelers went for it on a 4th-and-4 from the 34-yard line. And I thought this was kind of interesting. Tomlin was asked about what do you look at in terms of the range of your kicker from a game-to-game basis, and Mike was very detailed in this answer.
It depends on him. It depends on how he performs in pregame warm-ups. It depends on the stadium environment, climate, windage, and so forth.
Nothing like windage as a Tomlinism to be thrown in. I always thought it depended on windage for how long the kicker should be thrown out there. But, you know, that's a 52-yard field goal that they passed up. At Heinz Field, that's no gimme, as we know. Ben's back. You got Antonio Brown, et cetera, et cetera. And in fact, that pass that was incomplete was right off Antonio's hands. Might have been tipped, actually. I think it was tipped, but it was a makeable pass. I don't blame them for going for it. Somebody had reported in pregame that Boswell's range was 50. Well, he'd missed from 53. So maybe Tomlin's right. Maybe there was windage, and he looked at the pregame, and he saw that he missed a 53-yarder, and he said, heck, I'm not going for it from here. So at least he has some logic. And back to Mike Mitchell, in terms of playing it easy on Mike, he also defended Mike for the attempted fumble recovery, which actually he did recover. He just stepped in front of, I believe it was Bud Dupree who was coming up behind him up the sideline and would have returned that for a return for a score. So, but instead of ripping Mitchell, he praised his guys for rallying to the football.
It was a bang-bang play. Obviously, you like him to reestablish himself, but hindsight is great. It's perfect. In those instances, I thought he worked to get back in bounds. They made the correct call. It was unfortunate, but we had guys hustling. I thought the most exciting element of the play was the number of guys that we had in the frame. You know, I mentioned the physicality of our play, but I think the hustle was a very positive thing as well. I mean, that was a ball in the flat on third down and 8 or 9, and boy, we had 6 or 7 guys in that frame as he recovered that ball. That's the type of defense we got to play.
And there's nothing wrong with hustling and guys rallying to the ball. And, of course, the Super Bowl win that Tomlin has featured the James Harrison 100 with guys leading him in a cavalry up the sideline in a big blocking scheme. And Tomlin, in the Super Bowl video, talked about how they had worked on that the couple weeks leading up to the game because he didn't like the way they were doing it in the previous week. So I'm not going to rule that out as insignificant, but that's a big play for Mitchell to not know the rule, get back into the field of play, and that's another football IQ coaching awareness thing that, again, I don't think Tomlin, hopefully he's a little more vociferous with this behind the scenes than he is with us in the media. A couple quick ones here on Steelers 365. We'll have our fantasy focus, as we always do, in just a few. Back to the Tomlin critiques of his defense. He was willing to talk about the run game problems. This was Tim Benn's question, first about the gap integrity, and then he was also asked about the rotation at D-line. But first, here's their troubles in the run game and what Tomlin thought about them.
I wasn't talking about one-on-ones in the run game. I was talking about one-on-ones in the passing game. We got to win more of those. In the run game, man, we just got to maintain gap integrity. We got to be where it is we're supposed to be. Our shortcomings in that area were more a function of us not being where we're supposed to be as opposed to guys just getting physically defeated.
And one notable in the game, Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt did not miss a snap. No snaps for Cam Thomas. McClendon got like 15 or so. And Tomlin took a little shot at his backup players. This was actually kind of funny. Why no rotation on the D-line, Mike?
You know, we're going to play the guys that displayed it. They deserve to play. So if those guys want to play more, they need to stoke our fire.
Is Cam Thomas stoking your fire? I didn't think so. Two more. No huddle offense and Landry Jones. Is it a possibility at home? His first start was in Kansas City. That's a hostile environment, although there were some Steelers fans there. Will they consider it? Mike T says.
You know, I think that's to be determined as we prepare this week. We're not opposed to it. Like we talked about the first time we played Landry, nobody's accumulated more preseason snaps in 2015 than Landry Jones. He's done a lot. He's done a lot of no huddle. He's new to playing in regular season games, but he's not new to us, new to our system of football. We'll let production over the course of the week be our guide in terms of utilization of that and every other aspect of our offense.
And you may laugh at that, but Landry Jones, when he came in for Mike Vick in that Arizona win, he called an audible, and it was like, what, an audible? Are you kidding me? We can do that with a backup quarterback? Somebody can audible out of a play that's a poor one and get into a good one? So Landry showed an ability, is the point, to be able to be a little diverse and to make some changes at the line of scrimmage. So that's good news. I don't know if that will lead to a lot of no-huddle offense necessarily for the great Landry Jones, but at least he, unlike Mike Vick, had the knowledge and probably does go to all the games he played in the preseason back to earlier this year. Steelers 365 here on Trib Live Radio. I'm Ken Laird. We're brought to you by Mr. Magic Car Wash. We're brought to you by Mr. Reuter Plumbing and by Garland Insurance and Nationwide. Every Wednesday, we love having Jeff Erickson on from rotowire.com to talk a little fantasy football. And Jeff is the guru in that department. Jeff, welcome. And it was a huge week for Antonio Brown around here. Obviously, fantasy owners were loving that if they hadn't traded him already back to the backup quarterback weeks. But then again, Ben gets hurt. And is it time to trade Antonio Brown once again now that Ben's going to be out for a few?
Well, the problem with trading him is everybody knows that what the problem is. You're not going to get that max value for him. You know, he did connect with Landry Jones late in that game, so I'm kind of crossing my fingers and hoping it's a little bit better with Jones than it was with Michael Vick, where it's just a disaster. I think, you know, it's a little bit of a different setup there, at least with Jones. So I'm kind of going to just try to ride it out. Hopefully that Ben will come back after the bye and hope that it's not that bad. And the thing is, you know, with Roethlisberger, he always comes back ahead of the schedule, you know, so I think that you can have that reason for optimism. So I'm going to probably just hold on to Brown if I have him.
Well, I want to play a soundbite here for you, Jeff. This was Mike Tomlin yesterday talking about Antonio Brown's targets that he got. And because when he comes back in a few weeks, Roethlisberger, you wonder if Brown's going to get 23 targets again. Listening to what Tomlin had to say yesterday about all the action for Antonio Brown and very little for the other guys.
You know, I don't know if it could be characterized as an issue. I know that he had no issue getting the ball to Antonio, so it makes it reasonable to expect that it might have been issues with others. What do you have, 23 targets? You're not going to see 23 targets too often to one man. We'll continue to work to strike that balance among the guys that we spread the ball around to, but safe to say I wasn't displeased with the fact that he found Antonio, 17, 18 times Sunday.
So that's kind of talking in circles, but like when Ben is back, do you feel like it will be more of a balance, or is it just the A-B show?
I think, you know, it won't be 23 times, but if it's 16, 17 targets, great. I mean, he's right. If it's working, don't break it.
Yeah. And that affects Martavis Bryant and the rest of the fantasy plays with this team, of course, going forward. Was a tough week for, I'm sure, a lot of people last week, Jeff, because of just a weird schedule. I don't know. There were a lot of teams on bye. There are more again this week, but how does this week compare from the fantasy football world to last week?
Well, four teams on bye. It's still a pretty good, you know, it's pretty tricky because you've got some good teams on bye this week. You've got the Colts. You've got the Chargers. A lot of people using a lot of aspects of that San Diego offense. So, you know, you're still going to have to scramble a little bit. And once again, we're just trying to find running backs. It's so hard to find a running back that's a workhorse running back. In today's NFL, there are so many teams that are using these committees. It makes it so tough. Look at like the Redskins, trying to pinpoint which one of those running backs is going to be helpful, or the Giants where they have four running backs that they use. You know, it's really difficult.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Atlanta's out this week too. They've been losing surprisingly on the field. I guess they've kind of settled on their guy, Devontae Freeman, right? But he'll be missed this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they're the opposite because they just channel all their production through just like three players, basically. It's Julio Jones, it's Devonta Freeman, and then occasionally Jacob Tammy. They don't even have a second wide receiver that does much, at least with Leonard Hankerson out. So, they, you know, that's the thing. Atlanta, at least you know where you're getting your production from. So that's a tough one to have. Like, I've got Julio in a lot of leagues, so I'm going to be scrambling this week.
Yeah, and maybe that's why Atlanta's losing in reality football, too. You go through a couple guys that had surprising big weeks in the fantasy world. Dallas wide receiver Cole Beasley. What do you make of his week?
You know what? I think that that was a nice little week for him. I wouldn't count on it repeating. He had been shut out the previous 2 weeks with Castle at quarterback. I think it just happened to be it worked. He was able to get open, and Castle was able to find him. Maybe they'll. And I think having a healthy Dez Bryant really does help Beasley out a lot, draw some of that coverage away. But I think this was if you happen to have Beasley going for you, kudos to you. Now move on.
Okay. In Pittsburgh, of course, the Raiders were lighting up the Steelers' defense. Michael Crabtree had a big chunk of that. Are you still bullish on Crabtree with Amari Cooper?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Crabtree was a first-round pick. You got to remember that. He was, you know, the receiver coming out of the draft 1 year. And, you know, I think with Derek Carr developing like he's been doing, I think that both Crabtree and Cooper can be very productive from most weeks. Now, this week against Minnesota is a little bit tricky. I think that they've got a really tough defense, and I think it's going to be tougher. But, you know, you saw what they did against the Jets 2 weeks ago, and that was one that was an eye-opener to me because nobody really was able to pass that effectively against the Jets. All of a sudden, Crabtree goes off, Carr goes off against them. I was pretty impressed.
The Bears have a tough matchup in St. Louis, but Jeremy Langford had a pretty good week as their running back, 18 carries, 72 yards, and a couple catches. What do you think about Langford?
You know, he's got this opportunity. I think Forte is going to miss this week. The Bears are really tough with injuries. Sometimes John Fox will kind of purposely cloud things when it comes to injuries. So, but he had a PRP injection last week, and usually it takes a couple of weeks for everything to take effect on that. I would assume that he'll sit out this week, and Langford is going to be pretty productive. Got a tough matchup against the Rams this week. I think he will get the carries, though. And, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, if he gets 15 to 20 touches, hey, that's a pretty good good start. There's not too many players like that right now in the NFL.
We're joined by Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com, looking ahead to Week 10 in the fantasy football world here on Steelers 365. How about the Thursday night game this week, Jeff, with Buffalo and Rex Ryan's offense? Do you know, between LeSean McCoy's health and Carlos Williams, who had a pretty big week when he went out last week, who you're really feeling, if anybody, this Thursday?
You know, it's because it's the short week and because of the injury to Shady McCoy, I'm a little wary of both. I think that, you know, I'm gonna go with McCoy over Williams if I have to. But we'll just have to wait for like the last minute reports heading into that game tomorrow. It's not a great matchup once again against the Jets. You usually typically don't run the ball that well against the Jets. So I would assume that there'll be limited production. I think you'll get 10 to 12 carries for each back.
Jacksonville put up some surprising points against the Jets last week. They play in Baltimore this week. What about Allen Hurns and was Allen Robinson their other receiver, right? How about the Jacksonville skill guys?
Yeah, they've been great, you know, for a number of different weeks. That's the thing. Blake Bortles has had a string of 300-yard games, and, you know, he'll have the disaster play, but he'll have a lot of production. Those two receivers have been great. Hurns, you got to watch out for. He sprained his foot in the last play of the game against the Jets. He was in a walking boot on Monday, so you want to watch that one carefully. But, you know, assuming he plays, and that's a leap right now, but, you know, he's been a guy that you pretty much plug and play in every single week. And I like Robinson a lot this week. I think he's going to have a big week.
Denver hosts Kansas City at 4 o'clock Eastern time. The tight end, Owen Daniels, had a big week. He's a free agent in my league. I don't know if he is in a lot of yours or that you see. Do you think Peyton has found a new affinity for his tight end?
You know, he's always liked tight ends in the past. The thing about Owen Daniels is earlier this season he had a matchup against the Raiders, and everybody's like, oh, you got to start him, self-included. And I used him a lot of different places because the Raiders had all sorts of problems against tight ends, and he did nothing. Really nothing. Couldn't get any separation at all. I'm really surprised he was able to produce this week against the Colts. I wouldn't count on it. Keep in mind they traded for Vernon Davis a week ago, and maybe they had a little fire in him. I'm not sure, but I think it's more likely it just happened to be that week that he happened to get open a lot. But I wouldn't count on that repeating itself.
Yeah, that's a great point about Davis. How about New England now? Deion Lewis out for the year. LeGarrette Blount is the obvious short-term backup, but do you think they would go for one of their other depth guys to kind of fill in the scat back role, somebody who can catch passes?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's the thing about New England is they won't they'll go a game where they throw the ball, where they run the ball just five times or something like that. And Blount, even though it seems like he'd be obvious, there'll be games where he doesn't get that many snaps. Blount's obviously, you know, someone you have to have. He's got to be owned. I would look at James White as the alternative. I think he's a reasonable setup there as someone that's got a chance to be the receiving back. He was inactive last week, though, so it's a little tricky. Brandon Bolden could be that guy, too. But I like White just a little bit better than Bolden.
Packers lose again. They're hosting Detroit this week. Any knowledge of their running back situation with Eddie Lacy?
Oh, he's got a sore groin, so we got to watch him. And he's just been a disaster. I can't start him right now. If I've got any reasonable alternative, I'm going to have to go ahead and go with him. I would use Blount ahead of him without any hesitation right now. I've got him buried like in the 30s in my rankings for this week.
And that includes James Starks too, I imagine?
I'd use Starks. I'd use Starks for sure over Lacy. He's reliable enough. He's not, and the thing is, he's not like a great alternative, but he's been better than Lacy. And yeah, I would use him for over Lacy for sure.
Bengals, your Bengals, back in action Monday night. They host Houston. Jeremy Hill's been kind of an interesting guy to watch every week. I think I've asked you about the running backs every week there. Last week, 15 carries, 52 yards, didn't get in the end zone. Are you tempted to sit him, or do you kind of ride him out? He's owned in pretty much every league, right?
Yeah. I think you're kind of tempted to use him anyhow. I mean, against Houston, I like the matchup. And the thing is, and the problem with both Hill and Bernard is they're both good. So they're both going to get their work, and it's working for the Bengals. It's a good situation for the Bengals, a bad situation for fantasy. That they've got two alternatives. It's kind of like New England in a way that, one, Bernard is a little bit better at running outside and catching passes, but he can run inside, and Hill's much better running inside, and he's not much of a pass catcher. So he's kind of like the LeGarrette Blount of this situation.
The last we saw Tampa, they lost. Doug Martin had a pretty rough game. They play Dallas this week. What do you think about Doug Martin and the Bucs offense?
You know, Martin, you know, every time we start to write him off, he has a big game. Every time we start to count on him, he kind of disappoints. He had a big, big drop against the Giants. It would have been a big, pass play on a wheel route that would have gone for a big play, and he dropped it. The production possibilities are still there, and I think you kind of have to use him if you own him.
How about Cleveland now? I don't want to laugh, but they do have Gary Barnidge. He's had a pretty decent year. He was dropping passes, though, in that Thursday night game against your Bengals, Jeff. And I guess McCown back might help him out. Would you put him back in this week?
I probably would. Chances are you don't have a better alternative. Cleveland's so frustrating. They've got a running back in Duke Johnson that really is a really explosive player, has done really well in the receiving game, and they underutilize him severely. They just force the ball to Isaiah Crowell instead. I still think there's going to be a game where Duke Johnson gets 15 to 20 touches and goes off. Barnidge I would use. Travis Benjamin is kind of a bye-week fill-in at this point in time. You can't use him week in, week out. But it seems to me like a franchise that's always tough for them to use the players that they should. And I'm not even, you know, I feel bad for Browns fans in a way because I think they're mismanaged.
How about the Washington-New Orleans matchup? I mean, we've seen some high-scoring games with the Saints here of late. Will this spark DeSean Jackson and, Pierre Garçon, some of the other Redskins receivers that you'd automatically use them this week?
Yeah, I think it might. I'm not sure about Jackson just because he's coming off that, you know, last week is his first game coming back from that hamstring injury, made him miss 7 weeks. I think that, I'm hesitant to use him, but I probably at the end of the day would plug him in. I'm definitely happy to use Jordan Reed this week. I think he'll have a pretty decent game. You know, Jamison Crowder still got some work last week. He got 6 catches last week, even with Jackson back. I think against the Saints, he might be a sneaky play.
And last but not least, I know they're on bye this week, but Andrew Luck is out for the year, well, possibly out for the year. Does that make you feel like you got to just forget about the rest of the Colts receivers, like Moncrief and Hilton and those guys, or would you keep playing them with the backup?
You know, Hasselbeck actually was able to connect with them a little bit. I'd hold on to him in the hopes that it's, you know, they gave a pretty wide range for Andrew. Like they said, 2 to 6 weeks, which, you know, that's a pretty wide range of results. I wouldn't count on the Colts to tell us a whole lot either. They've been a little bit less than truthful with medical news as well. It seems like that's a trend in the NFL, but they've been one of the worst. But I would hold on to him with the hopes that he comes back in the short range.
Jeff, the value meter will be up shortly, I'm assuming, if it's not already.
It went up late last night, so it's good to go. Check it all out. I'll update it again Thursday. Post your questions at the bottom of it. I'll happy to get back to you, and good luck this week.
The sign of the apocalypse, Jeff, the Bengals are still unbeaten. This is incredible. I mean, I don't know if they're going to threaten the Dolphins' unbeaten season, but kudos to your boys. What a year.
So far, so good, and just let the Patriots keep winning so they get all the attention. I'll be fine with that.
Jeff, thanks for your time, as always.
All right, thanks, Ken.
All right, Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com. Always fabulous insight into the world of fantasy sports. Bengals and the Texans this week. Houston in Cincinnati on Monday night. That's an interesting game because, you look at the standings now in the AFC South, and yes, the Colts are 4-5, but they lost Luck, and according to Chow, our guy, Pro Football Doc, 6 weeks, 2 weeks is very optimistic. He's thinking 6-plus, maybe the whole year. So Houston at 3-5. They go in and beat Cincinnati. They tie for the division, and they might be the team to beat And you can't rule out Jacksonville or Tennessee either at 2-6 right now. And the Steelers could play one of those teams if they win their division. And the Steelers get the number 5 seed in the wild card picture. So a huge, huge effect in the AFC yesterday. Quick pause here on Steelers 365. We're brought to you by Garland Insurance and Nationwide. Products and solutions to help you and your family build for the future. Contact Nationwide's Rich Garland today at 412-678-8868. Find out if your money could be working harder for you. Mr. Magic Car Wash brings you Steelers 365. 5 great locations, Brentwood, Castle, Shannon, Banksville Road, Upper St. Clair, and Bridgeville, and at MrMagicCarWash.com. And Rooter2.com, Mr. Rooter Plumbing, 24-7 emergency service, and they work weekends at no extra charge. Rooter, the number 2.com. John Banaszak, Super Steeler, 3-time Super Bowl champion, joins us to talk about the Robert Morris win this past week. We'll gear you up for 10 a.m. and the Jag Off of the Week balloting, which will commence at that point. This is Trib Live Radio at TribLive.com.